everybody, it's Michelle Fisher, and welcome into A View From My Window. As always, I thank you for joining us today. Today, I am so thrilled to be talking to my friend LaMondre Pugh. I met LaMondre not in a person-to-person meeting, but a person-to-video meeting a year ago. As I was watching the video, he mentioned something about living big, living full, and living authentic. I knew right then that I needed to know who this guy was and how he stays so happy despite the challenges he faces living with spinal muscular atrophy type 2, a genetic neuromuscular disorder that affects the nerve cells that control voluntary muscles. LaMondre, I'm so excited to be talking to you. First of all, what SMA type 2 is and how it affects you?
Well, spinal muscular atrophy falls underneath the umbrella of muscular dystrophy. It is one of the 40 neurological disorders that's covered, over 40 neurological disorders that's covered, and the type that I have is type 2 spinal muscular atrophy. I was diagnosed at 18 months after my mom noticed that when I would walk, and I started walking relatively early. I started walking at 9 months. But when I started walking, she would notice when I'd fall down, I'd have difficulties getting back up on my own. And I would rarely run. I wouldn't run, actually. Hmm. And, you know, she had a child before me, so she realized that, something's not right about this. And so she took me to my pediatrician. He set up an appointment with a specialist. The specialist came back with the astonishing news that I was just being lazy.
Oh,
and now what's funny about that is, what does a 9-month-old know about being lazy? I mean, I'm just discovering my face, my hands, my feet, the world around me.
Your voice.
Exactly. I'm into everything. So it was not lazy. My mom was thinking, no, I know that's not the answer. So about 9 months later is when we got the appointment at the Medical University in Charleston, and they did a muscle biopsy, and they found out that I had some form of muscular dystrophy. At the time, they weren't really sure exactly what type of muscular dystrophy I had, and the prognosis that they gave my mom was relatively bleak. They told her that I would not live to be 5. And honestly, during that time, you got that a lot. But of course, my mom was a single teenage parent, and she, hearing that, she didn't quite know how to process that. And so the advice that they gave her was to put me in a home and just kind of let me go. And she said, well, I'm not doing that. And they said, well, what have you been doing? She said, well, I've been loving him. You take him home and that's what you do. You just continue to love him. And her attitude was, you know, it doesn't matter how much time we have. It doesn't matter what the prognosis is. I'm going to raise him. I'm going to give him the love. I'm going to give him the support. And I'm going to give him the tools that he would need to survive no matter how long that time is. And that's what she did. And my mom's a rock star superhero in my book.
She is. And we're going to get to your mom in a little bit. But you and I met, unbeknownst to you, about a year and a half ago in January. And we got introduced through a video. And I have no idea, and this is horrible to say, but I have no idea what else was brought out in that video. But I do remember the mantra that I heard. You said, live big, live full, and live authentic. And you know what? It really made me stop in my tracks and ask myself, how many of my fears of failure or fears of any type are holding me back? So tell me about how that mantra has gotten deeper as you've gotten older.
That mantra did not come about until I got older, honestly. That's a really deep question, Michelle.
You're welcome.
thank you so much. But let me give you a little bit about my background.
Sure.
I grew up in the church. My family was a deeply spiritual family. And I grew up in the church. And in growing up in the church, there were a lot of expectations. There were a lot of traditions and norms that most people adhered to. And this is no fault of the church. This was my own interpretation of it. I thought that I had to live up to those expectations or live to that expectation. Mm. I won't say live up to it, but I felt like I had to live to that expectations and live up to what other people expected me to be. Mm. And for the longest, I was trying to be something that I wasn't necessarily, and what I mean by that, not in that I was trying to be a believer and I didn't believe, not that, but just who I am and the actions and those kinds of things. But it wasn't until later on in life that I realized that even as a believer, and I'm a Christian, but as a believer, that my faith dictates to me that I'm to be what God created me to be, number one, and not what other people expected me to be, but what God created me to be. And in embracing that whole thing about being what I was purposed to be is when I developed the mantra of live big, live full, and live authentic. And here's why I say that, and you can interpret it however you want to, but the reason that I say live big, live full, and live authentic is because the best way for me to have a complete life is to be all that I am created to be. Live big. I believe that our souls are bigger than anything in us. I believe that the essence of who we are is far bigger than the physical shell that carries us. And so that's where the live big comes in at. And the live full piece of it really is about enjoying all that life has to offer you, all that you can muster into that. And so when you talk about the fears and when you talk about those things that hold you back, it's about living life in spite of those fears, living life. And here's the funny part about it. You can be fearful and still be brave, because bravery is not the absence of fear, but bravery is moving forward in spite of the fear. It's having that fear and still going after what it is that you want to go after, having that fear living within you and still moving forward to take that step, to climb that mountain, to do whatever it is that you've purposed in your heart and in your mind to do. That's what bravery is. So that's the live full portion of it. And then to live authentic is that I am enough. I, LaMondre Pugh, am enough. With what? All my deficits, with all of my faults, with all of my shortcomings, I still am enough. And because I'm enough, I have value. And I have something that I bring to the table.
And, you know, and I think that's hard for people. I mean, especially for me when I was, that's why I think I connected with you and resonated with you so much was that live authentic piece. I mean, you know, yeah. I didn't want to seem weaker than I was. I'm already physically weak. You know, I don't want to be emotionally weak or, you know, psychologically, mentally weak, but you have to go through that before you get to the other side.
Right, right. And here's the thing, you know, that piece of it is that, you know, we have this desire to puff up. We have this desire to seem invincible. But I think the part of authenticity is saying that a part of it is being vulnerable, but vulnerable to yourself. Mm. Vulnerable to recognize that we all have weaknesses. Mm-hmm. We all have shortcomings. And here's the thing, because we have perceived it in our own heads, and I'm talking about our own perception of ourselves, because we have perceived it to be a weakness, that doesn't mean that the rest of the world sees it that way.
Right.
And neither does the rest of the world dictate how we move within ourselves either. So a part of that is overcoming that and realizing that all of us deal with insecurities in some way, shape, or form. I remember I watched an interview that Oprah Winfrey did, and Oprah is one of my heroes.
I love Oprah.
Yeah, so do I.
I love Oprah.
I know I'm a big, burly guy.
Shout
out to Oprah. I'm a big, burly guy, but I still find the wisdom and insights that she has shared over the years to be absolutely incredible. But I remember watching an interview with her, and I remember her saying that she had the insecurity of their realizing that she is, or her realizing, or people realizing that she's not who she's portraying to be. Hmm. In other words, and those weren't her exact words, but it was basically her saying that she was not enough. Hmm. Now, this is Oprah Winfrey. We're talking about billionaire Oprah Winfrey. We're talking about the woman whose word can launch multi-million dollar companies overnight.
For real.
And she wasn't feeling as if she was adequate. She wasn't feeling as if she was enough. Even though every day in her life she proved over and over again that she was more than enough. Mm. But my thinking was, if she has those feelings, then it's obviously something that an ordinary everyday average person like myself, I can have those feelings and still succeed as well.
Yeah.
And that's why I believe it's important that, particularly if you're in a friendship, if you're in a relationship where it's a true friendship, not one of these casual acquaintances, but if it's a true friendship, that you should be able to share your vulnerabilities. You should be able to share your feelings of insecurity, because that's where you'll find the support, and that person will be honest with you about theirs as well. And you'll know that, okay, so I'm not in this boat by myself. I've got some shipmates, and we can move forward.
So is that where you help others to incorporate this mantra into their own lives, is don't worry about being vulnerable or expressing your feelings?
Well, and I do. That's a part of the way that I do that. And the way that I do that is by helping people find a safe space to be vulnerable, helping people find a safe place where they can share that. I do some coaching.
Yes, you do.
Here and there.
Yes, you do.
And that's what I find a lot of people are lacking. They are lacking an opportunity where they can feel safe in expressing how they truly feel. And that's a part of the living authentic. You know, if I don't like something, I don't like it. If I'm fearful of something, I can express that and not be judged . But if it's something that I need to overcome, or if it's something that I need to move forward with, then I can say, this is how I feel. Let me deal with it and move on. So yes, that's a part of how I do that, is just by allowing people the space to be exactly who and what they are without judgment.
That's so good. I love that. Now, I want to go back to your mom for a second, because I don't know your mom personally, but I love her. I love her, because and you were talking about this a little bit before, because when you were diagnosed, your doctors were going, oh no, he's going to live until 5. Just leave him. And you were saying that she was a single teenage mom. She was how old when she had you?
19. She was 19 years old when she had me. Right.
So, I mean, and they were saying, don't take him home. So, as a young single mom, that had to be, like, unbelievable for her to hear. But can you share why she made the decision not to listen to the doctors?
Well, my mom was always a rebel, number one. and this is what this is one of the things I love about I call her my Betty Boo.
I love it.
But my Betty Boo has always been the type of person to speak her mind, to have her own mind, and to follow her own drum. And now, keep in mind, my mom had a child before me, my sister, my older sister, who's my other superhero.
Yes.
And she is definitely a superhero to me. But, you know, it's always been us. It's always been the three of us. We've always been a super tight-knit family unit. And my mom and my grandmother, my mom was basically adopted. And so she was chosen with love. She was taken with love when someone else could not necessarily care for her in the way that she needed to be at that moment. And it was not because of a lack of love or anything like that. It was just the way that the circumstance and the situation worked out. So my mother was chosen with love. So, you know, her not taking me home, or her not loving me and caring for me just because I was a child with a disability, wasn't an option. It simply was not even in the option box for her. You know, a lot of times when people think of loving their child, especially these days, they think of this cotton candy, pie in the sky, almost over romanced kind of thing. No, that's not the kind of love that Betty Pugh was dishing out. You know, my mom was a very strict disciplinarian. She was also the type of person who required a thought process. She required me to think through things. She required me to be analytical. She required me to take responsibility for my own life and deal with the consequences of whatever it was that I decided to do. And this is how she raised me. My mom was a child, you know, born in the 50s. So she grew up in the 60s and 70s, and this was right on the cusp of integration and these kinds of things. And my mother was a part of that class that was integrated into public school systems in South Carolina. So, you know, we had some serious racial issues going on here in the South. And, you know, she was one of the ones who was out there on the front lines protesting. She was one of the ones who was out there making certain that her voice made a difference. I mean, Afro, black fist in the air, Ungawa, black power. That's my mom.
Yeah.
That's my mother. And that mentality permeated every aspect of her life. So when it came down to me, even being born as a person with a disability, it was always a sense of empowerment. It was always a sense of taking responsibility for your own destiny. And that's what she instilled in me.
So,
and myself, for that matter.
Yeah. And I love a person who can do that because they can see way far down the line. But let's take it down to you, because as you grew up and you saw this attitude and nothing stopped her and she saw your potential no matter what. And how did it become, as you grew up, how did it become your potential, your vision? It wasn't just mom telling me to be this way. It became me right in here.
Right. I think that's because when I was very young, my mother, again, it goes back to her. It really does go back to her. And I have to give her all of that credit, because we always had very real conversations, being just the three of us. We always had very real conversations and real world conversations. And I remember one day my mother, we were talking, and she said, son, no one would treat you the way that you would treat yourself. And people would treat you the way that you teach them to treat you. She said, if you want something in life, you're going to have to go after it, because no one's going to give you that thing. They'll pat you on your head. They'll tell you how cute you are. But they will never respect you as a man if you don't stand up and be that man. And those words, and believe, I was super young. I was super young when she said that, but I internalized that. I internalized that. And not only did she say those things to me, she began to do the things that will reinforce that. So, like, for example, when I was mainstreamed into a regular public school system at about the age of 13, you know, if we did school trips and those kinds of things, she didn't arrange that stuff. She said, if this is what you want to do, you set it up. And she said, in the end, you bring it to me ready to go and I'll pay for it. Because, of course, I didn't have a job. I was 13. I mean, come on.
Help me, Mom.
Right. Right. But she said, when you bring it to me, everything needs to be in order.
Mm.
And it was a time that I missed it. And when I missed it, I suffered the consequences of that. I didn't go.
Mm.
I couldn't go on those things.
Yeah.
So she internalized those things for me. And then when I was probably, I would say in high school, is when I really start taking on the responsibility for myself.
Mm.
When I was like, you know what? No, I don't necessarily need mom to do this anymore. I've got this. And so I started making my own plans. I decided that I wanted to go to college, that I didn't want to just go to a trade school, but I wanted to go to college. I didn't want to just go through voc rehab. And what was interesting is that, you know, Vocational Rehabilitation, while they're a great organization and have done some amazing things for people, that was not the route I wanted to go. And they tried hard. And finally my mom was like, well, what do you want to do? And I told her, she was like, well, then that's what you do. And so these are the kinds of examples that I've had over my life of really just taking control of my own destiny and not allowing anyone or anything else to do that for me. So it was probably about high school age when I really took on that and started to go with that. Now, it wasn't until I turned 18 that I became politically active and experienced a severe culture shock as I grew. But
Now, let's talk about, you know, I remember growing up and I wasn't really keen on being helped or physical therapy or, you know, it just made my differences stick out. But I understand now, getting older, that, you know, the intention was to help me move forward. How did you navigate that for yourself? The fact that you have home health care nurses come in and do all of that, and how did you navigate all that?
Well, with SMA? especially as a child growing up, you know, you are. Honestly, you become like the professional doctor's appointment person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm serious because I remember going to doctor's appointments when nothing was really being discussed about helping me to improve. But what it was I was pretty much there for the medical students.
Mm.
It would be a room full of medical students and they're all
You playing. Were the guinea pig.
I was the guinea pig. I was the one, guess what he's got? You know, it was like... It was almost like a game show. Like, they would get a prize. They'd be like, Duchenne's dystrophy, no, you know? You know, and so they would go through and eventually got to the point where it was like, okay, so how is this benefiting me? How is this benefiting me? How would bracing this part of my body really benefit me other than to make me look typical to other people? Now, if there was something like scoliosis, so I have spinal muscular atrophy, so a part of that is scoliosis, and I had to get my spine fused. Well, I understood why that was, because without that, it would compress my lungs and my diaphragm, and I'd have difficulty breathing. So I understood that. So I was fine with having that surgery, but then there were other surgeries. Well, it was just going to help you, you know, your foot not to drop, and I'm thinking if that is going to help improve the quality of my life, great. But if it's just so that I will appear typical to other people, then no, I don't want to do that. Why would I bother the naturalness of my body? See, I believe that disability is simply a point of diversity. It is simply a part of who I am. Like, you know, your hair may be red, I have no hair.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no need to apologize. I love this. Listen, this bald head goes far, okay? It takes me
it
far.
It does.
So, you know, I am, but it's a part of what makes me me. So I'm not trying to change those things. Now, I will tell you, as I get older, I realize the benefits of exercising and physical therapy and all those kinds of things. So you do that, but I do that to stay healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I do that to make certain that the quality of my life is at a certain point. But what I don't like is when people come in and they're trying to, I need my mouse moved because I have very limited dexterity in my hands, and they want to make a physical therapy session out of me getting my mouse. And I'm like, just put my mouse where I need my mouse to be. I don't need you to be little Richard Simmons in here, you know. Jazzercising with my mouse, just move my mouse. So, you know, and there is a balance. It's so interesting because I know that people are just trying to be helpful.
Yes.
And do what they can, but come on, you no.
Well, no. And I think one of the things that I realized in the article that I read from the home health company that you said, I loved this. You said disability is a minority group that anyone can join at any time. And then later on in the paragraph, you said, I realize that I can give a voice to people with disabilities, and I can also magnify the voices that are already out there. Oh, right. I mean, angels sung when I read that. But talk about the magnifying the voices out there. What do you do? How do you do it?
There's a couple of things. I'm the chief sustainability officer for a company called Root Global Impact.
Yes, I know Root Global Impact.
Absolutely. Deborah Root is the CEO, and she's an incredible advocate. She's an incredible disabilities advocate. She's an incredible advocate for women in technology. She's an incredible advocate for the planet. She is just one of these
people. And she's a world traveler.
She is a world traveler, and in fact, she just came back from China. So it's an amazing company to work for. We're doing some really amazing things. But one of the things that being the chief sustainability officer for Global Impact has afforded me is the opportunity to create a podcast. I have a podcast that should be coming out. The first episode is already out.
Oh.
Yep, the first episode is already out. It's called 5P. With Lamondra, and those 5P stands for people, planet, prosperity, peace, and partnership. Now, when I say that I can help magnify the voices that are already out there, the purpose of 5P is to give people who are doing their part to make the world a better place a platform. And it doesn't matter if they're people with disabilities. No, my thing is looking at the world and the state of the world, I see that there are a lot of people who are really trying to improve things. And one of those groups is the United Nations, and they set out this 2030 agenda, and they have 17 goals that they are trying to accomplish. And those goals are called the Sustainable Development Goals. And there's 17 of them, and they range everywhere from eradicating poverty all the way to climate action, to gender equality, to partnerships to make those goals a reality. So what I can do in helping to magnify the voices that are already out there is to give them a platform to speak, very much like what you're doing, Michelle. And I appreciate what you do and the opportunity that you've given me today to just get that voice out there. And here's the thing, especially when we start looking at being a voice and magnifying voices, sometimes we want to feel special. Sometimes we want to feel like, yes, we're exceptional and there's no one else as special as I am. Well, the truth is, no. The only person I'm really special to is my mama. And she told me I was special ever since I was a little boy. But she also made it clear that I wasn't going to be special to everybody. And that there are other people that are out there whose views and whose words are just as important and just as impactful as mine. And instead of competing with them, I should partner with them to amplify and push their agenda forward. Because I believe that if I help them get what they want in life, I'll get what I want in life. And so that's the philosophy and that's the approach that I take. And to be honest with you, that's the approach of Real Global Impact. We help people magnify their disability inclusion efforts. And, you know, a lot of times what that means is that there may be organizations and companies that are already doing great work, that are already doing things. And what we do is we just help magnify those things, or we help fill in the gaps when there are gaps in those programs. And so it's a philosophy of life that I don't have to compete. What I need to do is partner. What I need to do is support, because there's room enough for all of us.
Well, you know what, LaMondre? I'm going to tell you that I have had the absolute pleasure of interviewing you today. And I have to say that I agree with your mom. You have so much potential and you are fulfilling it so well. I thank you so very much for taking the time today. I know you have a lot on your schedule, but you took the time to talk to me, and we've built a great friendship. Thank you so very much.
Absolutely. Listen, I just want to say this to you, because I know we're about to go.
Okay.
But I just want to say this to you. You keep shining, Michelle.
Aw, thank you.
There is such light that radiates from you, and you have a very unique voice, and I think that there is such a space for it. I need to hear you more. I need to see you more. You are like a ray of sunshine. And I know that people are encouraged. I know that people are challenged. I know that people are lifted when they hear you. So you keep lifting. And thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend. And thank you so much for listening today, everybody. Have a great day today. Bye-bye.